Magnified with Matt Cooper. Proudly sponsored by Close Brothers Motor Finance. Recognised on Trustpilot as best in class in Ireland. With fast, fair finance decisions. Made in minutes, sometimes seconds. Motor dealerships and brokers. Looking to become a partner? Get in touch at closemotorfinance.ie.
Go loud. Sounds better with us.
Welcome to our latest edition of Magnified. We're back with the interview series where we get the chance to talk in detail with our guests. And we're joined today by Jenny Kelly and Mairead Rowlan. I'll tell you why in a moment. We're talking to them. But just to let you know that this series of Magnified is brought to you by Close Brothers Motor Finance, which is recognised on Trustpilot as best in class for motor finance, customer service, speed of decisions and support in Ireland. Motor dealerships and brokers looking to join the network should get in touch and speak to the team at closemotorfinance.ie. So let's get to our guests today, Mairead Rowlan, Jenny Kelly. Now, for Magnified today, we have two people who recently were with me on The Last Word, and I didn't get long enough to talk to them about themselves and their new book, What We Know Now, Lessons in Life, Love, Loss and Friendship. So Mairead Rowlan and Jenny Kelly, you're very welcome to Magnified.
Thanks, Matt.
Now, for those who didn't hear The Last Word interview, explain the book to me, please.
Take that one, Jenny.
Oh God, I take this one. Well, I suppose we have to go back to the beginning, why we wrote it in the first place. And Mairead and I met each other over, 22 years ago now?
22 years ago, yeah.
When we were working in Today FM, and I'm sure we'll talk about that
absolutely
later. But we started doing a podcast nearly 2 years ago now. And kind of what set us up for doing the podcast was we felt like we were kind of missing hearing what we would call normal women talking to each other and the way women talk to each other.
Actually talk to each other
about everything and anything. So you could be going out for a big stompy walk, or you could be sitting down having a coffee with each other, and you could literally go from, you know, something that's really upsetting you, maybe, you know, something going on within your family. You could be talking about grief, and then you could talk about actually you just bought the best steam mop, you know, going. And so you literally can talk about everything and anything. And so we just felt like that was kind of missing. Like we couldn't hear women talking about the things that we were talking about and laughing about the things that we were talking about.
Well, yeah. In a way that, I mean, I don't listen to it, and I don't know how many of the listeners to this would have listened to it, but I have a perception of, say, for things like on BBC Radio, the Women's Hour, it's been quite serious conversations about feminism or in the workplace or whatever and things. Whereas you think that perhaps some of the conversations that women have, well, they would touch on issues like that, would be done perhaps in a different way.
They are done in a different way. I can, you know, myself and Jenny can talk when we're having a coffee, when we meet up, anything from politics, what's going on at the moment, the election coming up, as Jenny said then, something awful that's going on in our lives, something hilarious that's going on in our lives, something the kids said, something our husbands have done that have made us feel a bit of rage. So we talk about all these things.
You don't snitch on your husband.
Absolutely.
To each other, do you?
Every now and again.
Is that fair?
It's fair. It's exactly
Speaking for myself, I've had it for years where my husband has had the airwaves to talk about me. So I'm like, it's about time.
So that's what we've done. And we've reconnected with old Today FM listeners. They're still young. But listeners who were with us years ago on the Ray Darcy show were with me at lunchtime on Today FM. And they're with us now on the podcast. So it's really lovely. We have a pretty much for sure 99% female audience. We have a couple of men who listen to us.
And then we said with the book. So when the book idea came about, we were like, well, what is it? You know, what is the book? And we were like, it's the podcast on paper.
Yeah.
So that's why there's 16 chapters in there, but it's everything from, you know, like we said, there's like agings in there, there's cleanings in there, there's grief, there's what brings you joy, being human.
Raising teens.
Yeah, motherhood. So it covers
marriage, weddings, divorce. Oh, it's all in there.
It is. And it's your sort of individual essays that sort of bounce off each other. It's very cleverly put together. But, you know, I'm probably, you know, you might perceive me to be sort of a serious person. So yeah, maybe some of the questions I'm going to ask
might
be a bit serious.
Okay, I've sat up. Hang on.
I'm actually interested. You see, one thing.
Yeah, we both sat up. We both sat up and went like this.
But when you talk about doing the podcast, and you mentioned about having done the lunchtime show here on Today FM, how many years is it now since you left us?
It is almost 3 years.
Yeah.
Since I've left Today FM.
Okay, you see, because I'm interested in both of you have a curiosity about life. And both of you are also performers to an extent. And yet you gave up that job and you gave up your work as well. Mm-hmm. First of all here, then when you were with Ray in RT Radio. And I think this really interests me about Ireland has changed so that women get far more opportunity in your generation than they would have had in previous generations.
That's true.
More opportunity in work, more opportunity. And yet trying to balance that all out with the responsibilities of relationships and parenthood and the rest of it. And it is more difficult, I think it's fair to say, for women than it often is for men. And you end up giving up more, perhaps, than men do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In most cases, not all cases, but in some cases.
I mean, first off, I have to say that I'm privileged that I could step back from work because
I'm very glad you said that. That's a really good point.
It is, because there's so many women who got in touch with me after I've left Today FM who, one, were saying, I really admire what you're doing. You know, you'll never get these years back with your children. And then others, which I was really sad about, saying, I wish I could do what you're doing. I would love to do what you're doing, but we simply can't afford to do it. So, you know, and that broke my heart as well, because we've talked about this in the podcast. I feel like, yes, our mother's generation didn't have the opportunities, but it's just swung so far the other way now that there is really no choice for women other than to get out there and work.
Our sort of society is set up that the cost of having a home or whatever is based
on two incomes, two salaries, two people working full time, and they are squeezed during those early years where kids have to go to creche or they're finished school at 1:15 and they need to go to childcare after that. They're squeezed and squeezed and squeezed, and then they can come up for air, I think, when the kids are, you know, that little bit older, can walk home from school themselves, and maybe they're teenagers. But there's a huge cost to that as well, as a personal cost. And I could see that because I have this split family. I have an older son from a previous relationship and I had these two little girls, and I saw how quickly Dara had grown up in a flash. You know, all of a sudden he was in secondary school and I was thinking, how the hell did that happen? I didn't have the opportunity when Dara was younger to take a step back from work. In fact, I did the opposite. I took every single job going. I was working for RTE. I was working multiple jobs here in Today FM and freelancing as well outside of here. And when I looked at my little girls, I just thought, I actually want to hang out with them. For the first time in my life, Matt, I looked at my childminder, my lovely childminder, Kay, and I felt like she had a better job than me. And I had never felt like that. And she was sending me photos of being in St. Anne's Park in Raheny with the girls. And I just thought, I want to do that. And I didn't get the buzz from coming into work every day that I used to get. It had just gone. It had left me. And I knew you were a few years ahead of me, Jenny. You had done it. And so I could see, you know, somebody else had done it. I could see that it was difficult to give up as well. But I could see that you were ultimately happier in the choice you'd made. And I knew I had to do it. A very difficult choice, but I knew I had to do it. And like I said, nearly 3 years on, I've absolutely no regrets. In fact, I think it was probably one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life.
But it's a good job you still have a podcast to keep.
Still have a podcast. Yeah. I do still have a podcast, yeah.
But I think isn't that the whole point, though, that there is no easy way?
No.
Like, it is a big decision. Like, you know, speaking from my own perspective, like I was raised always, you know, to get out there, get your job, have your own money. That was a big thing, you know, have your own money. So when you're making a decision like that, you are giving up so much, a lot of your independence, because you're then reliant on your partner. And there was a part of my brain that was like, you know, this is very risky. And I kind of felt like I was setting myself up for failure. And is this something that I really wanted to do? Or, you know, was I going to be bored? Was I going to be frustrated? All of those things, all of those fears. And weirdly, when I said that I was stepping back from work, I got a pretty negative reaction from women around me who I think there was kind of a sense of kind of annoyance or anger that I was, you know, giving up my career, that everything that I'd worked so hard for, which I had, I'd worked incredibly hard, that I was kind of setting back the kind of feminist, you know, this kind of, you know,
you're going back in time. You're taking a step back.
Yeah, that and as well, you know, from some listeners as well, you know, that I got messages from women who were slightly aggrieved at the decision that I had made. But at the end of the day, you just had to silence all of the voices that are coming in at you, and you have to go, is this the right decision for now? And it was.
See, this isn't a self-help book.
No, it's definitely not.
No, it's more just you setting out yourselves, your experiences, and then people can take from that what they will, it's fair to say. But I think it is interesting that I suspect there are a lot of women who, particularly as they are in middle age and as they have children, who do face these dilemmas, as you've just expressed for us here in this conversation.
Yeah, but I think it's something... I kind of think what happens is either there's a breaking point at home where you feel like nobody's steering the ship and everything's kind of falling apart. Do you know, there's nobody taking control.
It always falls to the woman then, does it?
Well, actually, the majority of time it does. Yeah. It does. Yeah. The majority of the time,
but is
it
that
does.
Because that is just part of the maternal instinct.
Well,
men and women are wired differently.
I feel like you're not allowed to say that nowadays.
I mean,
like, I actually do. Think
we,
that
we grew them, as I say to my own kids, I grew you in my tummy. You know, we grew these little babies. Like, so there is a completely different feeling and a different connection. I'm not saying that the connection is greater, it's a different connection that mothers have with the children than fathers have.
But we do have to say as well, because I know from female friends of mine that there are others out there who would like rather chop off their leg rather than be at home all time with the kids.
Yeah.
They just absolutely, that's
and I think that's absolutely okay.
Them.
Well, it is, because, I mean, I mentioned both of you, the curiosity that you have, that you've displayed in the years that you were on Ray's show and a lot of things that you've done, that you're interested in other people and that you're interested in things and that it can be very difficult, I think, for a lot of women, for smart women, if they find themselves, you know, almost talking baby talk, and talking at such a level and having what might be, and please, any female listeners, do not take offence to this, but what might be considered rather limited conversations in the playground or over coffee, where it's only just talk about what baby A is doing or child B is doing or whatever.
Yeah, but is
rather
it
in sort of more wider context of things?
Yes.
Yeah.
Am I killed for something?
No, because that is the truth. And I think, you know, when we, like, I write about that as well in the book, that I say, you know, there were times when I had got up in the morning and by 10:30, all I'd done is a series of, you know, menial tasks in the home. And then I was thinking about, oh, well, hang on, I have to think about dinner for later and I need to feckin' steam mop the kitchen or whatever. And I was like,
change the bed clothes.
And there were days, there were quite a few days where I was like, what am I doing? Like, and I felt like I was letting myself down. I had this voice in my head that was saying, Jenny, like, what are you doing? Like, you worked so hard for, you know, for all of your life to have a career, to get to a certain place in your career. And now I'm at home and I'm thinking, like, am I going to have chicken or fish tonight?
Yeah.
And what's your obsession with steam mops? I don't know, it's two or three times.
I think I've mentioned it three times.
Sorry, we have mentioned them. Yeah,
we are obsessed.
We do love it. We do love a steam cleaner. We both have the same one.
What is the issue? God, and they break down. I think I've bought three in the last 10 years.
You got the wrong one.
You
got the wrong one.
Whatever and stuff.
No, the Karcher SC.
I tend to go for
hashtag not
ads.
Yeah,
I resent the idea of spending big money on it.
220 quid. That's what you just, that's it. One and done. One and done, Mark. That's it. It is worth it.
I think what we wanted with all of this was, it was about starting a conversation. So we're not saying, oh, look at us, we know it all, because we don't, and we're failing all the time and we're learning all the time. But it was about that idea of starting conversations, and that's what we're kind of getting the feedback from podcast
listeners.
We're also
not saying our way is the right way.
No.
We've, you know, like, I have felt exactly the same way that Jenny has numerous times at home, like, come back from the school run, you know, walk the dog, clean up the breakfast dishes, you know, all those things. And it can be very boring. But I also look back to a time when all of those tasks faced me when I came home after doing a day's work too. And I just right now couldn't go back to that. I couldn't go back to that right now.
You got to walk the dog as part of the school run. You got multiple.
Two tasks
in one to actually save time, you know?
I know, but he can bark. He can bark at a lot of things. He can bark at other dogs. Gets a bit awkward.
Yeah, but I do also think, though, it's a weird world when you have come from the world of radio, media, that you never stop being curious. Like, I would still go through the papers. Like, I go through the papers with a pen. I still circle.
Oh, you still got the physical papers. You're not reading them online or anything.
Oh, no, I have to have the physical paper.
And she subscribes online too.
You're a traditionalist.
Yeah, we do both.
She is both.
Which is ridiculous. But I love the paper to rip out stuff and to be able to give it to Ray. And I'd be like, oh, this is a really good story. I see it online. I email him. I'm like, you know, or send him a WhatsApp, whatever. And I'm so, like, that doesn't end just because you've stepped back from work. And it was never a case of I'm stepping back and that is it. I'm now going to sit at home forever, you know, because now the kids are getting to a certain age, and like this with the podcast, with the book, that you're allowing yourself, I suppose, the space to do more things that you want to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Other things I want to pick up on from the book, I'm sure maybe a personal prejudice here, but I am fascinated in how you have spoken about giving up alcohol. Because I had a very interesting experience when I didn't entirely give up, right? So I occasionally still have a glass of wine or whatever if I'm having a good meal out, or like a nice glass of red wine, but it might be one at the max two. But when I first stopped drinking, which would be nearly 20 years ago now, the amount of grief I got from people about it, and you put your finger on it in one of the interviews as well, is that people start telling you, you'll be no crack if you're not drinking.
That was one of the biggest things. So I stopped in the summer of 2018. Okay. And I didn't tell anybody for months because I just knew I could not cope with people's reaction to it. And my biggest fear at the time was somebody saying to me, which sounds so bizarre, what'll you have to drink? And I'd be like, oh my God, what am I going to say? As opposed to going, I'll just have a sparkling water or whatever. I just thought, I'm not ready for this conversation. But when I first went out and decided this is the time, I'm going to be strong here after 6 months, and I'm going to be able to go, mine's a sparkling water. It was a Christmas girls' lunch, which was probably the most stupid thing to do, which is like the annual thing. And it's a lunch that goes on for many hours, and it always was great fun. And I remember I sat down and the waiter came over and he was like, champagne, you know, whatever it was, sparkling wine, you know, for everybody, Prosecco. And I was like, no, thank you. I'll just have sparkling water. And the heads literally, whoom. And everyone was like, what do you mean? What? You're not going to have fun. You're not going to have fun with us today. And the questions came and they kept coming. And I kept saying,
what sort of questions? I'm just interested. So I know what sort of questions I was asked.
So I was like, for this particular lunch, what I found interesting that day was I tried to dismiss it because I didn't want to make it about me not drinking. I was like, I'm just not drinking. Everybody just fire ahead and do your own thing. But I noticed then that everyone started talking about their drinking. As in, well, I can take it or leave it. And then somebody else was like, oh, I'm only going to have a few drinks tonight. And, oh, no, well, I was out last night, so I'm going to probably have a few. And then I've actually thought about stopping drinking as well. And it became like a big discussion that went on for about an hour.
Did nobody think of asking you whether you were sick or something, that you actually had to stop drinking for a medical reason or anything like that?
No, nobody.
That's interesting about your friends, isn't it?
Yeah.
Did anybody ask you? And I had this experience from a few people who were practically strangers who asked me when they realised I wasn't drinking at events, they asked me, was I an alcoholic? Did anyone ask you that?
Well, people have kind of done the head tilt and the, you know.
You don't drink anymore.
Because there's this assumption, and I probably was the same, that you're sold this idea that you are either a normal drinker or an alcoholic. But there's no grey area there. And I think that keeps a lot of people, it stops them from stopping drinking because they go, well, I'm not an alcoholic, so I'll just try to manage my drinking. And I've heard so much of that, like those discussions, oh, I'm only going to have three drinks tonight. Or when I go out, and I'm going to have water between each drink. And you're kind of trying to tell yourself, you're giving yourself a reason as to why you can drink, as opposed to just going out and saying, well, maybe I won't drink tonight, because you're terrified of not drinking, because we've all been conditioned to think going out, having fun equals drinking.
Well, it equals getting drunk. As opposed to just drinking.
Yeah.
I think in the Irish psyche, it's very much about going out and getting pissed.
Margaret, listen, just ignore Jenny for a second now, okay? Just pretend she's not.
Okay.
Good. Is Jenny any crack anymore? Oh. She stopped drinking on a night out, Mairead?
If I can be really honest, I think Jenny's more crack now.
I didn't pay her.
Shouldn't pay her to say that.
That's outrageous ass kissing.
I think you are.
I describe it in the book that how I felt when I went out was like Jim Carrey and the mask. Mm. That like I'd go out and I'd stick the mask on and my personality would rev up about 200%. And which my personality does not need to be revved up.
Nobody needed 200% more, Jenny.
And if I and I did, I've spent like a good few years. Like it's been one of the probably the biggest changes in my entire life to get serious. Like it really is a huge thing for me and in Ireland to stop drinking. And I feel when I was drinking all those years that I probably was careless about things that I said. I was probably, probably careless around people and not mindful of people and thoughtless. And I'm really glad that that side of me has been put away, because I don't really like that version of myself.
Mm.
So...
is this inspiring you to give up drink, Mairead? Not that you need to give up drink or anything like that. But.
No, I mean, I kind of, I don't know, maybe I'm going to sound like one of the lunch friends now, Jenny, but I enjoy every drink I have. I don't drink a lot, but every drink I have, I really enjoy. And I suppose because of what Jenny has done, I'm a lot braver now when it comes to nights where I do not want to drink because I might have a run of busyness ahead of me and I can go out and I can be with friends and I can easily say now, no, I'm not going to drink tonight. I'm busy for the next few days and the night continues on as normal. But I wouldn't have done that before.
Of course, when you became friends, you would have partied a lot together.
Oh God. Oh, God, oh yeah. My God, we partied very hard.
We partied very hard.
You were unusual. And I say this, I say this from having worked in Today FM from 2003, January 2003. And I would have worked with you, Mairead, prior to that.
When 2002,
you
were on,
when you came into the station. And I was on many occasions that year sitting in for Eamon Dunphy, who was out writing his Roy Keane book. So I would have been around quite a bit. So I would have known you from back there. But whereas teams often do socialise together, I doubt if there's ever been a team in radio that socialised together as much as the Ray Darcy team.
Yeah, we did.
And went on holidays.
Went on holidays and went on bank holiday weekends away together. I mean, when you look
slept back, in camper vans together.
Yeah. We used to.
What was all that about?
I don't know. What was it about? We were just, it was very incestuous, really.
And do you know other friends?
We did.
Yeah, other friends. We probably didn't get to see them a lot.
No, we didn't.
I think it was just a moment in time that we all loved what we were doing.
Yeah.
We worked insane hours, but we didn't even clock those up as hours.
No, they never felt
like it. It wasn't like, oh my God, I'm still working, it's 8 o'clock. It was like, we were all so kind of determined and to make the show
really successful.
Really successful and as good as it could be. And there was the sense that we were kind of growing up with the listeners and we were having so much fun and we were getting feedback from them and we just kind of didn't want that to end. When the show ended, we didn't want to kind of go home. We wanted to hang out with each other.
If we look back to any of the many things we did on the show, if you clocked up the hours, I mean, it's totally illegal, like the amount of hours we worked. I mean, one, we talked about this a while ago. It was a thing we did to try and find Ireland's next comedian, right? And we set out on a Sunday. On a Sunday. We drove to Cork. We stayed overnight in a hotel. We would have worked that night.
That night we would have set up.
We would have set up, yeah. And then the next morning did the show for 3 hours. Then after that, I can't remember, we would have been preparing the show the next day. Then we had to be ready to have a show on a bus with a live audience of 50 people at 5:30. Then we would have taken that audio. We would have edited that audio for packages for the next day. Finished editing, I don't know, 11, half 11 at night. Probably had a bottle of red wine at the same time. And the next morning it continued, and that was only Tuesday. Then we also had to finish that show on Tuesday and then drive to Galway to do the whole thing again.
Set up
and
we
did that. Now, at no point would we have asked for a day off work or overtime. It just didn't happen.
It didn't even come into our heads.
So that was the norm for how things happened at that time on the Ray Darcy show. I mean, you just wouldn't get away with it now.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about it. You weren't required to work that hard when you got to RT.
What podcast? Can we just stop recording for a second?
Ed, keep that in. We need to take a break.
Staying in. The point of the entire podcast.
We need to take a break. Back with more Magnified, Mairéad Ronan and Jenny Kelly after this. Welcome back to Magnified, Mairéad Ronan and Jenny Kelly with us today. So, if you were picking one part out of the book that you want to talk about, what would be the one that you think we should talk about?
Oh my God.
I don't know.
Well, like, we've already touched on the alcohol one, which is probably the one that I am like incredibly proud of. Mm. Like, I loved writing that, and I've probably had kind of the most interesting reaction. Like, even when we did our live podcast, a couple of women came up, and emails we've had in since from people who have read the book. It's allowing kind of what I was saying at the beginning about starting conversations. It's allowing those conversations start, as in somebody else is seeing that somebody else did it. And so that I am very proud of. I kind of really like the joy one and being human.
Yeah, being human.
Yeah. I love all that. And I like also when we talked about our kind of different take on aging.
Yeah.
Well, talk to me about aging. Because, as I said, I've known you for over 20 years.
And I haven't aged a day.
Not at all. But you were a child when you were in here, Maria.
I was a child. I mean, I came in here as a 21-year-old. I hadn't finished college yet. And then turned 22 very quickly and never left. So, I mean, that can keep you immature in one way, but I came in here as a very old head on young shoulders, didn't I really?
Yeah, but it was kind of surface level old.
Surface level old, yeah. I feel like I'm only really mature now in the last few years.
I mean, down to the fact that it wasn't long after your mother had died as well.
It is true because my mom had died just a year before. Yeah. I, at the time, felt like the most mature person in my family, and include my dad in that. Like, my dad and my two much older sisters. There's 9 years. One is 9 years older. One is 12 years older.
One 9 years older, similar age gap to Jenny.
Yeah. You're only 8 years older, so don't put her as old as Olga. She's not as old as Olga.
Yeah, add 9 years.
But, yeah, they...
Similar.
Yeah. They fell apart, really. I mean, physically and mentally fell apart when my mom died, and I felt like I had it all together. So I was very mature, very solid, and I felt like, you know, I've got things sussed out. I don't know if that served me very well in my 20s, though. You know, because I went down a road of, I got married very young, very, very young. I got engaged at 23. I was extremely young. Got married at 24. Much to Jenny screaming at me. Jenny, like, are you sure? You're very young.
That's because my mother had always said, never even contemplate getting married before the age of 30. Mm-hmm. I had that drummed into me. So I remember looking at Mairéad and just thinking, God, she's so young.
But actually, see, this actually brings us something else, in that you were unusual to become best friends, given that 8-year gap in your 20s. Mm. I mean, an 8-year gap at the age you're at now, if you'd met later
is
on,
nothing.
Is nothing.
No, that doesn't
but
exist.
When you're in your 20s, like, it's sort of like, but 21-year-old gravitates to 29-year-old and you take 21-year-old under your wing.
But we'd say that's because Jenny would admit herself that she was very immature, and I was behaving like this 29-year-old, 30-year-old, you know. So we just met in the middle. We were the same.
Yeah, and again, going back to our working life, because we were literally together at the whole time. Mm. And our personalities just clicked. Mm.
So. Which is weird, because on paper we wouldn't.
Don't do that old gag.
I'm telling you what. But we wouldn't be friends. It's like, you know, you're Poshy from Fox Rock.
I'm from Finglas.
Working class Finglas. I mean, it's just, you know.
But you're now indistinguishable.
Do you think?
Yeah.
No,
you
she's just
even
it's
sound
the way,
a bit alike.
How do we?
No, you're still Ray. Ray.
I think this is disgraceful. But anyway, Mairead, you were talking about aging.
Aging. Oh God, what else are we talking? Well, I suppose we have different approaches to aging, don't we? I, you know, Jenny's trying to get me to like let my hair grow out and be grey because I'm very, very grey. Not a chance that's happening. It will not happen.
Don't do it.
It will never happen.
Don't do it.
It's never going to, Matt, you don't have to worry about it. It's never going to happen. Yeah. Jenny's like, I think you look really cool.
In my defense, I don't think I ever actually said that because like, I've seen you through every hair color.
Yeah.
I think I have.
No, you
every
have.
Single
every
hair,
single hair color.
Hair color. But I think when it comes to aging, it was more, I am suspicious of a whole industry that is based on female insecurity. You know, we're kind of sold this idea that, you know, it's self-care and you're just doing it for yourself. And I go, really? Are we?
Yeah.
Or are we not told that aging, it's not acceptable to age, that it's not acceptable as a woman to have lines in your face or to, I'm not even talking about the hair.
So you don't Botox?
Well, I think you can tell I don't.
No, I'm asking. Yeah. I'm not making any assumptions.
Yeah, no, I don't.
Well, the assumption I was making based on the way you were speaking rather than looking.
Yeah,
at you.
No.
I think you'd love Profilo. I think you'd love Profilo.
What's that?
Profilo is, it is injected into your face and it is like intense moisturizer, basically. That's a very, very kind of basic
way. It's not Botox, though.
It's not, no. So you have movement, but you've got this really gorgeous glow on your face. Now, it does hurt.
Do you do that?
Yeah, I do. Okay. I do Profilo, yeah. Yeah, okay. And I love it. Now, it hurts.
Is it like Botox as well?
It's injected.
You have to do it for the rest of your
life? Yeah, it is. I mean, like when it's gone, I look wrecked.
She doesn't.
How often do you have to
do it? She doesn't.
Probably every 6 to 9 months. So it could be twice a year or you could stretch it out a little bit more. Whereas Botox, I think you have to get that done like every 3 months, you know, 3 to 4 months. But Profilo is, it's lovely. I like it. I'm a fan of it.
If you like it and it makes you happy.
Yeah. And like, I suppose that's where we differ. Jenny would think, you know, I'm a bit mad doing that, but I do like it. No,
it's not a judgment call. We all do whatever the hell we want to do. But I suppose I'm looking as well. I have a near 18-year-old daughter and I get sad thinking about the world that she's in, and it's much worse for her than it ever was for me. And they're constantly looking at their faces and they're
constantly have phones in their hands,
their imperfections, and they're being told, and it annoys me, they're being told that there's a way that they can fix themselves, they can make themselves be better by looking better. And I just think that's so insipid, and it's sad. It's very, very sad, I think, that young people are kind of going out into the world thinking about all the ways that they can fix themselves to have this outward so-called perfect look.
It's just the way things have moved on. I don't agree with it either, but, you know, Back in our generation, a girl who had like tiny boobs wore a big push-up bra with padding in it.
It's not the same.
Get hair extensions. You get braces to fix your imperfect teeth.
No, it's not the same.
Yeah, that's a good point, Marie. Is it just every generation
has a new thing?
It's expressed in different ways.
I do. I think that. I don't agree with this. And I'm saying there's like sucky-in corsets now, which are back. They were there a long, long time ago. Now they're all back to give women a smaller waist. That's
and
all the Kardashian thing.
They were jettisoned on the basis that they were actually anti-feminist. Yeah. They were sort of oppressive of women.
Yeah.
And they go, no, suddenly they're brought back as a symbol of freedom.
All the Kardashians kind of wearing those. I don't agree with it, but I just feel like it moves on and the whole cosmetic world moves on. I mean, you have things from basic makeup to contour your face to make you look like you've cheekbones when you don't have them, with contouring to injecting and fixing things that need to be fixed.
I think it's not just injecting and fixing because those things wear off. I think people going off and putting themselves in severe danger to have full-on surgery, all like, I just don't get it. I've never got it.
Yeah.
I feel sad.
That is definitely a step too far. Mm. For me too, but I do think that that's the way it's going to be, because we go, like, I think it's like dentistry is, nobody questions that now. Nobody does. You know, people just.
Well, I do.
I'm
permanently looking at people who are going around with those Simon Cowell teeth, going, "That is terrible." So they are. There are people out there who are questioning. Most people now watch TV and go, oh my God, look what she's done to her lips. Oh my God, look at the Botox. Oh my God, look at the white teeth. So they are questioning it.
Yeah. Well, we do say a lot of the times, leave your lips alone. Leave your lips, alone.
You know, you said earlier in this podcast about your own podcast, which you think is almost exclusively listened to by women.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope the men who are listening to this podcast are still listening. They haven't got a man listening to these women earlier
on.
They
might be
gone.
But
an insight into the female brain.
But see, that's what I was just about to bring up, because I wonder if those who are still listening to us, you know, what they're getting from this conversation and what do you think would they get from the book? I mean, if men were to secretly sit down over Christmas, maybe they buy the book for their wife or their girlfriend. But if they were to pick it up and just have a look at it, what do you think would they get out of it?
That's a good question.
What would they get out of it? Probably get some tips into.
Can I turn that question back on you?
No, you can't.
Yeah, can I turn that to you?
What did you feel that you learnt? Or maybe you didn't, but is there something that you
learned?
I did
find it very interesting in parts. I'm just sort of like, yes, I mean, I suppose I am at the moment living with wife and three adult women as well as two other boys. So I've had to learn an awful lot over the last 25 years or so about what it is about girls and about women growing up, given that I was an only child. So I never grew up with sisters or anything like that and understanding that. So I suppose I'm on my own ever evolving journey and trying to understand. So I related to an awful lot of what you had in the book, which, shall I say, wasn't necessarily unfamiliar to me.
Okay.
But I wonder then, does every man necessarily, and I'm not trying to hold myself up virtuously here, take that sort of interest in what it is that women are interested in?
But I think there's loads in the book. I know we've said like the majority of our listeners are women and the book is obviously very pink and, you know, we would think that men possibly will go into bookshops and go, that would be a great Christmas present and give, you know, people giving to their sisters and best friends. But there's a lot within the book as well that is our own kind of general philosophy, which, you know, which I think is like anybody could read that and get something from it. So, you know, we even talk about kind of Stoic philosophy in there, our favorite quote, you know, you'll be dead forever. You know, that whole idea of memento mori and, you know, remember you will die. And
things that are equally applicable to men as to women.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. And to keep that ever present, and talking of present, we're constantly talking about that, to live in the present moment as much as we can, that we all tend to catastrophize either by looking to the past.
Which you can do nothing about.
Or looking at the future, you can again do nothing about that. All we can all do, hopefully, is try to live as much as we can in the present moment. So I think that's a lesson for everyone, not just women.
Yeah. Well, there's other things in there that I talk about IVF. I mean, that affects men greatly too. And raising teens, you know, men could get a female perspective on that, because sometimes, you know, dads and teenagers can clash a lot.
As mothers and teens.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. As mothers and teens can too. Exactly. What else is in there? My God, I'm trying to think.
Well, how much of that comes down to then, though, also working in partnership with the other parent?
Oh, that's so important. And actually, on this week's podcast, we talk about that. I talk about how it's so important to be, you know, on the one team. I mean, that's really what a good marriage or a good partnership is. In my eyes, it's just you're playing on the same team. And yes, you can have differences in opinions when it comes to different things, but when you're raising the kids, you really have to be aligned on everything, and you have to back each other up on everything. I think that's so important, especially when they're teens.
Given that you both have teens turning into adulthood,
yeah,
what would they make of the book, do you reckon?
Well,
I wouldn't expect them to be reading it now.
No.
Yeah, well, actually, Dara has.
Has he?
Yeah, Dara has read it. And I gave Dara certain chapters to look at before I sent them to the editor. So what myself and Jenny did, I would write a piece or she would write a piece and we'd send it to each other. And we'd give each other feedback before we would send it over to Gil, our publishers.
I think we were kind of minding each other.
Yeah, we were.
We were minding each other. I'd be like, maybe you want to reconsider this
last
bit
part.
There,
yeah, or maybe you want to change that, or maybe you want to add in a little bit more there. Or, so I let Dara see a couple of chapters. One that is pretty much about him raising teens, and he laughed at it. So he was very happy with that. He didn't have to make any changes. One about divorce, because obviously it involves his dad and very much him as well, you know.
Yep.
And then one about IVF, because I just, you know, it's our family. Mm. So he read those three chapters before they went to Gil, and he was happy with all of them. And but then he's read the full book then, and he really likes it. Yeah, he's
good. And you know what would be fascinating would be if he read it again in 10 years time, in 20 years time, and what he actually thinks then.
So then, yeah. I mean, it's a lovely thing for our kids to have, which I'm sure it's lovely for your children to have, you know, books, other books you've written too. It's lovely.
I know, a couple of them might have read one or two of them, but yes, but I wouldn't expect them to.
It's a lovely thing.
Kate has not read.
Has she not?
No. And she wouldn't. I think it would just make her feel uncomfortable. I think she'll probably in a couple of years.
She'll get to it later on.
Yeah. And that's fine. Mm. That's absolutely fine. That's fine.
That's
Kate.
Fine. Fine.
Well, can I ask you, I mean, how do you feel about revealing so much of yourselves?
It really didn't feel like that. And I would have felt like that if I was still on radio every day. So it's strange taking the step back and then doing the podcast almost 2 years. With the podcast listeners, it feels very intimate, doesn't it? It feels like we know them, that they're pals. So it didn't feel like I was, you know, revealing much more of myself than I already have. Although I did. We both did.
Yeah, we did speak about stuff that we have never spoken about.
Yeah, before. But I almost felt strangely safe doing it because maybe a very naive, I thought the only people who'll buy this are listeners to our podcast. So it doesn't matter about it being out there. And I've since learned that it is very much out there. And we do interviews like this. And we did like the cover of the Irish Independent Weekend magazine. And you're going, oh shit, actually other people
Isn't
are going to
Isn't it interesting
to read
though? Because I always think that's why I love radio so much and podcasts, because you're in your studio world and it's so intimate.
Yeah.
I always find it very bizarre when somebody who I kind of wouldn't think of as a listener will say something back to me like, oh, I heard you say that. I get really quite nervous around that. It's almost like they've listened into a private conversation. So
which you put out there.
Which you publish it. And I kind of feel that with the book, kind of what you were saying, like a couple of years ago, definitely wouldn't have been able to write it.
Yeah.
And like definitely for me, there's absolutely no way I would have allowed myself be vulnerable and put it pen to paper, you know, tap it out in a book. I just wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have felt able. I wouldn't have felt safe. I kind of have this idea of being kind of... Are you okay?
Yeah. Sorry, it is pinging my iPad, which I didn't
expect. No, it's fine.
Sorry.
I was kind of raised and praised for being independent and, you know, self-reliant, and I wouldn't have allowed kind of vulnerability come into my world because I kind of would have thought it was a bit of a weakness. Whereas now, and we've spoken about this, I kind of see it as superpower. It's not to say that I'm walking around being Mrs. Vulnerable the whole time, because it's not completely in my nature. But I have found the more I open up, like it's a really lovely experience because you get so much back when you open up.
Yeah.
Isn't it great to be in that place?
It is.
It's lovely.
I think that is also part of aging. You know, you give less of a fuck. And
you can say it, Marie.
Yeah, okay. You give less of a fuck. Yeah. And
it's your fuck it era.
It's your fuck it era. It's my fuck it era.
Apple to have a change in our terms and conditions for the rating of this podcast.
But, and I think you realize as well, as an aging woman, middle-aged, you realize that we're all the same. We've all experienced the same stuff. We all kind of feel the same way. And by us sharing our stories, like Jenny has said, we get so much back from our listeners too.
This has been a different Magnified, but I've really enjoyed your company. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
and
Matt.
Congratulations on the book, What We Know Now, Lessons in Life, Love, Loss and Friendship. And remind me the name of the podcast again is?
It's Jenny and Raid Now. Because it was us then on Today FM. This is us now.
And we also love saying, now,
now, now, that's now. That done. Now, 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 who now. Wants tea?
Now, who wants a spray mop?
Now, that's now. The dog walked.
Now, Matt.
Now, put that wash on.
Now.
Enough. Thank you. So thanks again to Jenny and Mairead for being with us. And of course, also thank you to our series partner, Close Brothers Motor Finance, your best in class motor finance customer service based on trust and technology with the portal Close Connect is designed to make life easier for dealers, partners and brokers. So motor dealerships and brokers looking to join the network should get in touch with and speak to the team at closemotorfinance.ie. So that's it for this edition of Magnified. We have lots of other great guests for you to meet on this series, so do please join us.
Magnified with Matt Cooper, proudly sponsored by Close Brothers Motor Finance. With Close Connect, our technology means we can say yes more often. Approve finance applications in minutes and sometimes seconds. Partner with Close Brothers Motor Finance at closemotorfinance.ie.
Go loud. Sounds better with us.